Okay, let me just, with an analogy, you all go on the, everybody goes on the web and looks at people's websites. And you go there and say, oh, that's, they haven't changed it. There's nothing going on. It's kind of a dead website. Go 1 millisecond, you go on something else. And you find something else that that interests you. You can't do that in a community. Or your investment is going to be yesterday's and not tomorrow's.
I'm Blaine.
This is Jeff.
And this is Hidden Indy, the podcast that tells you the story of how Indianapolis came to be, through stories you probably haven't heard. Welcome to the last episode of season one of Hidden Indy. I'm Blaine.
This is Jeff.
And thank you so much for taking this journey with us. We can't describe our gratitude and thankfulness for the people that have listened with us and have been fans, and you know, a lot of that's been friends and family or people that we know in our network, but people that have jumped on at some point and heard about it through a different outlet, through
somebody, a friend through, of a friend,
yeah, or through whatever. Leadership Indy, or through somebody that was a Leadership Indy alum. We have to thank them so much for their support and helping us with the launch event. And you know, maybe it's somebody that knew Doug through DK New Media, or a client, or something along the lines. Whatever the case, whyever you started listening, we really appreciate it. So we alluded in the first episode that our whole goal around this is not just to tell these stories that we really feel need to be told and need to be heard, but to get more involvement in the city. And that cold open that you just heard from John Krause, who was deputy mayor for a while for Mayor Hudnut, it is like a website, you know. And that, you know, kind of pulling the curtain back a little bit, John Krause was our second interview, and we literally had 28 minutes maybe to interview him. He's still practicing. He had to go do some litigation, and he had to leave to go to the courthouse, and so we had a very limited amount of time. And he said that quote about the city being like a website. And with Jeff and I both being tech guys, that really stuck with us. And that's what gave us this idea that, hey, everybody that we interview, we've got to ask them, like, what's your advice? What makes you think that people should get involved? What do you think people should know to go volunteer? And, you know, when you hear this story, it's one of those things where you may look at it and you may not realize the risk that some of the people were taking, and you may not realize kind of how they were going out on a limb, although I hope that we've portrayed that effectively, because it was a large amount of risk. I mean, going back to Tom's quote from the Hoosier Dome episode, if that doesn't work out, he's the president of the chamber in Toledo, right? Right. It's another one of my favorite quotes from the
whole
season.
Not that there's anything wrong with Toledo.
No, not at all. My wife's family's from there. But, you know, I think Sid Weedman, who, if we haven't set him up properly, he was the director of Clues Hall for a long time, you know, very influential member of the community, and he was one of the main photographers. He's got two books around the Pan Am Games and the National Sports Festival. You know, this quote that you're going to hear from him, he kind of alludes to that, you know, like maybe it was easier when the city was Indian no place, when the only way you're getting a Hoosier office tractor is the state basketball tournament. But, you know, listen to Sid's words and then think about where we're at today.
Well, you have to put it in the right perspective, at least from my point of view, is that when this was going on, it was very easy to pull and coalesce people because it was so evident what needed to be fixed. I mean, you're just looking downtown, you're just looking what the city looked like, you looked at what was happening in the city, something needed to be done. So once you found that pivot point of sports is maybe what we're going to do, hell, everybody jumped on the bandwagon. And there was no very little resistance. I mean, you didn't have like the IUPUI I mean, if you tried to clear out that kind of land today, I mean, you'd have people marching and there'd be riots in the street over there. But it was just, as Dave Frick, deputy mayor, said, all the planets were in convergence. They were all in alignment. And it all just wasn't easy, but it did all work. So now, back to your advice. I don't know, because I don't know what, there's all kinds of things to get involved with. But frankly, and of course, part of it's my age now too, I don't want to get involved with anything.
We hear that, and you know, I'm sure that this is a thought that's been through people's heads, right, Jeff? Like, yeah, of course they were in, you know, of course Mark Miles, it was easy for him because at 30 years old, he was the executive director of the Pan Am Games, right?
Sure.
And now he's the vice president of IndyCar. We're not saying that the people are going to be able to be a 30-year-old and do the things Mark Miles did.
Yeah, it's not a common trajectory. I mean, these are uncommon people.
Right.
But we're looking today for uncommon people.
Exactly. Like, the next Mark Miles is out there.
Right.
The next Sid Weidman is out there. The next Michael Browning is out there. And
it's not obvious today.
No, it's not. It's not.
Because this is the thing that I think, you know, we tried to harp on, but not too much, is that, like, our city is great. Everyone loves to live here. Maybe not everyone, but everyone I care about loves to live here.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen by accident.
Well, and I think before we get into some of the other pieces of advice, I think that's a good point that you bring up, that not everybody loves to live here.
Sure. I don't know why.
Well, to be completely frank, those aren't our target audience.
Right.
You know, the people that you see that are commenting on Indy Star articles and going, yeah, Indianapolis is stuck in the past. And
right.
This is a terrible place to live. You know what my response to that is? Move.
Right.
Like, if you don't want to be here, don't be here.
We don't need you.
Yeah. I want people that are proud of their city and want to move it forward and sees things that they think, well, I don't necessarily like that. How can I fix it?
Right.
What can I do to be a part of the better change?
Right. There are problems today. I mean, these exist. They're
absolutely
not as obvious as holes in the ground.
Yeah.
But there are problems.
We just now earned the right to Sunday beer.
I knew that was coming up. I knew it. So, and I don't hate it.
Yeah. But hey, change happens because we make it happen.
Right.
Right? It's people like Jack Swarbuck that raise their hand and go, I don't know anything about team handball, but I want to do it because I know that it'll make this event better, which will bring great publicity to the city, which will make the city better, which will lead us into bigger and better things. And so I want to use that to lead into Jim Morris's advice. So Jim talks about relationships and how when you volunteer for things that you're passionate about, that you care about, you're going to meet other people that care about the things you care about, and you're going to form those relationships. And while the intent should be altruistic in that you want to help something that you care about, there is a benefit.
Right. You're also building a network.
You're building a network. You're helping form those relationships, and you never know where those relationships will go. So here's Jim Morris, who's the president or the vice president of the Pacers now. He was the head of the Lilly Endowment when a lot of these things happen. Without Jim Morris, we probably don't get the Hoosier Dome, which means we don't get the Pacers.
When you're involved, you make friends and you build relationships, and if you nurture them and help them grow and you work at it all the time, by the time you're my age, you'll have lots of friends and lots of people who trust you and you trust them, and you can do incredible things together. I mean, this city has built a remarkable downtown.
You can see how relationships start to form and how these things start to happen. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we do want to sell this to you guys, right? We do want you to hear this and get more involved. So if you're passionate about art and you want to get involved, go volunteer for the Arts Council. And if the thing that makes you volunteer for the Arts Council is that you might meet an artist that can help your art career, that's great.
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, you're out getting involved, making Indianapolis better.
Right. It's a two-way street.
Right.
Like, this city will help you if you help this city.
Absolutely. Yep. And I definitely wouldn't say do it for the intent of furthering your career, but know that it's possible.
Right. Absolutely.
So one of the things that I think is interesting is, you know, Allison had a couple of different points about this. You know, our community is a different type of community. Our community is a little bit more bent on volunteering. That's why they call it Hoosier Hospitality. And Allison, to this clip coming up, she talks about how that community is different and how, you know, our community can help form and forge new relationships and kind of move things forward.
Yeah, and I got to be honest, I can't remember if this is in this clip or something else she said, because I've listened to her so much.
We've listened to all of this so much.
I know, right? One thing that was really important was that, you know, she's pumping up basketballs and breaking them in, right? Because that's the thing you have to do.
Yeah.
And you're doing that next to somebody who might be in a completely different industry, in a completely different world, but now you have that bond to where you might never cross paths in your normal business or personal lives, but now you've created this connection where, you know, maybe one day you need to call on them for a favor. They call on you or whatever it is. You've created that bond. Hey, remember when we were breaking in those basketballs? I'm looking for someone to donate buses so we can get Olympic athletes. You know what I mean? Like, that's absolutely how it works.
No, I totally agree with you. And one of the things before we jump into Allison's clip that's so interesting about Allison was multiple people that we interviewed check their egos at the door when they talk about these things. And I'll kind of get into this a little bit more after Allison's clip, but we almost had to pry out things from Allison because she's so much more passionate about the community that she doesn't care about what Allison Millingdon's impact on the community was.
Right.
It was that the community was better because of the things that happened. She just saw herself as somebody that was able to move that forward.
Yeah. I mean, I had to turn the recorder back on. We'd stop the interview, and then she actually started talking about things that she was passionate about. I'm like, well, we're going to miss it. You know, like, and time and time again, that was the case where Tom King, great example.
Yeah.
We talked to him first. Great interview. I mean, just the stories and the, oh my gosh.
I remember we interviewed Tom King in the parking lot. Oh, sorry. We interviewed Tom King at the Indiana State Museum where he's the former CEO of. We were in the parking garage leaving, heading to our interview with John Krause, and I looked at Jeff and I said, you know, I feel like there's a lot that Tom didn't tell us because he didn't want to make himself seem, you know, too big. And I have a feeling we're going to end up coming back to him on some stuff.
And then everyone else we talked to said, Tom King, way too modest. He was such an important part of this. He'll never tell it to you himself, but I'm here to say, set the record straight. He was a very important part of this.
And we say all of that to lead into this clip for Allison because our community is different. You know, I think that if you're in Los Angeles or in New York or Dallas or Miami, those people want you to know their names belong on something. And our community was built on people who didn't want their names on things. They wanted this community to be better.
I think the community here is different than other places that I've lived. The civic engagement and the civic passion for moving the community forward together is different than the other places that I've lived.
I don't think it's fair to say anybody was more impactful than anybody else, because what you just heard from Allison was super impactful, but what we heard from John Krause was super impactful. What we heard from Jim Morris was super impactful.
Well, and I don't think anyone would want us to say.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think that's the whole point of that, right?
Exactly.
So the next clip coming up is from Michael Browning, and he talks about it not being in self-interest, kind of in the same lean, right? Mm-hmm. It's not about you. It's about what can, it's not the Kennedy quote. It's not what the country right. can do for you. It's not what the city can do for you. It's what you can do for the city.
Yeah.
And so.
To get us a little off track here, I got to say, this is one of two interviews that I thought, even when we had it in the books, might not happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about that. So before we get into Michael Browning's quote, so there were two people that when we talked to them, rightfully so, I think they were a little bit concerned that we were going to try to profit off their story.
Sure.
Because I'm sure that
we're not Wish TV. We're not.
Well, not whatever. That they're trying to profit off people's stories either, but.
No. But we're not a traditional news organization. So.
And they didn't know anything about us. They knew right. somebody had introduced us to them, and we wanted to tell this story about Pan Am Games or something. Like they had kind of, we had tangentially latched on one thing, right?
Right.
And so we had, you know, worked to try to talk to Michael Browning, and the same thing with Jim Morris, and kind of worked through their gatekeepers, as sure. you do. And when we finally got in the room, both of them were kind of like, very standoffish and very, I don't know what your goal is, so I'm not sure if I'm willing to open up, because I don't necessarily want these people I don't know to come make money off this story when all I was trying to do was help the city. And so we learned very quickly in this process, one of the first things we need to do is say, hey, we're not trying to make money off this. In all actuality, we will make $0 off this. If anything, we'll lose.
We're going to lose money.
We're
going
to pay our own out of pocket to pay for our equipment and things like this, because we want to be like you guys. We want to tell the story.
Right. This we're doing the best thing we can think of to mimic you.
Yeah, like, because because we don't have the money to go throwing around, and we're already trying to volunteer in every place we can.
Right.
So when we kind of told that side of it, all of a sudden people opened up.
Right.
Because they were like, oh, well, we see a lot of us in you.
Right.
Yeah, let me tell you my story.
Right, keep doing it. And to be fair, I mean, we're coming in with a microphone. You know, I mean, this is not just like a sit-down chat. Like, we wanted to record them, which also is very intimidating.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. But, you know, when we got talking to Michael, and he talked about that exact same thing. It's not about your self-interest. While, as we'll get to here in a second, you kind of want to find things that you're passionate about, because you're going to be, you know, I don't want to say more successful, but you're going to care more.
You'll enjoy it more.
Things that you're going to be passionate about. But it's not necessarily about what your self-interest is. It's about what's best for the city. So mm-hmm. I'll let Michael, you know, speak to that himself.
It's a matter of self-interest. If you want the community to grow and be the kind of place where you'd like to raise your family, these are the kind of things that need to happen. If it just turns into a business community and our education and churches and not-for-profits and those things suffer, people again won't want to live here. They'll take their family and go live someplace else.
In order for any community to grow, we have to be concerned about the community, and we can't be concerned about our own personal desires, our own personal agendas. And I think that that's one of the things that we've done successfully as a city. If you look at our mayors, we have kind of a back and forth between having a Democrat mayor, having a Republican mayor, having a Democrat mayor, having a Republican mayor. And through all of that, the growth just continues, because nobody stops it by going, well, my party wouldn't want that.
Right.
So I'm going to stop it.
And no one spends time trying to undo what someone else has done. It's always forward. It's always moving forward.
So we always want to move forward. We always want to do what's best for the city, and exactly what we talked about up to this point. But I think that in order to do that, kind of to our point a little bit ago, you kind of have to find something that you care about. you can't just jump in. You know, if you come in and you're just a developer and you work at Salesforce and you go, okay, well, the Indy 500's here, I'll just volunteer to park cars. That's great.
Sure.
We need people that that park cars at the Indy 500, we need people that are going to find things they're passionate about, because those are the voices that you need to hear. Kind of using my point earlier, maybe you've spent 10 hours listening to this podcast going, I don't care about sports. I am passionate about the arts and I love Penrod, but I know I don't have the money to sit on the Penrod board. I don't have the influence. Volunteer for Penrod.
Right.
Do something.
Just be close to it. Right.
Swipe tickets. Right. Whatever it is, go volunteer. Meet other people that are passionate about art. Meet other people. Go volunteer and plant trees for Keep Indianapolis Beautiful.
And that's the great thing about Indianapolis. I believe we're segueing to Finnick.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I threw in the Keep Indianapolis Beautiful. I know, what gave it away?
Yeah. But yeah, there literally is something for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
I don't know if we can fact check his stat. I don't think anyone would possibly be able to prove him wrong.
Yeah. But there's, literally something for everyone.
Yeah.
If you're into board games, go volunteer for the convention that's here, Gen Con, every summer.
Right.
Like, if you're into arts, there's Penrod, there's tons of things. Every single sporting event that's here has an arts component to it. Volunteer for that. If you're into animals, go find your local shelter and volunteer for that. Food. There's
so many.
Homeless. Yeah. The homeless initiative,
right.
Veterans, whatever it is, find your passion and just figure out where you can plug in. And sometimes that might be something really small up front, but you know what? Those small, tiny little things are what really builds the foundation for a big movement. So here's Greg talking about finding your passion and running with it.
Well, first of all, you have to find a little bit of your passion. Because I think that we have more not-for-profit organizations in Indianapolis per capita than any place on the globe, right? So first of all, find your passion. And when you find your passion, there's an organization around that passion. Get engaged.
So on top of finding your passion, I think it's important to understand that there probably are, I hope there are people that are listening that are business leaders, that are entrepreneurs, that are in a position to be able to either give a little bit more financially or from a time standpoint, or to give, you know, employees or whatever.
Create an environment where this is possible.
Right. So Ted Boehm kind of talks about that entrepreneurial sector and how you're going to not only find your passion, but kind of develop relationships and understand that it's really an exercise in how the community can be better for the business.
Well, and one thing, sorry to jump on this before we play it, but I'm almost certain we didn't include this in any episode, but he kind of mentioned offline that's important. I don't want to call him out, but it's important, is that the society that they lived in, whether right or wrong, was mostly one income households.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have someone to take care of all of the things that need to happen around the house and all the things that need to happen around raising children, it leaves a lot of spare time after work for volunteering and doing things like that. Whereas now, with mostly two income households, it really... You almost need an employer that values it so that they carve out time out of your workday, because you can't do it after work. You can't do it on the weekends because everyone's full court press on the things you need to do during the week and you know, around the house.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, as an entrepreneur, if you're starting a business or you're coming in as a leader, as an executive type that's moving into Indy and somehow you've stumbled upon our podcast as you're biking to work, make that a priority. early in your company, and don't make it words.
Right.
You know, show why that's important. Be out there. If you're saying, I want to do a Keep Indianapolis Beautiful Day for my company, be out there and grab a shovel and plant those trees. Like, be at the forefront of it. Show why it's important.
Right. And you can't say that enough. If you give people time to volunteer, obviously that's important and it helps. But if you stay behind and you're the boss and you're in the office and you're taking phone calls, no one's leaving the office.
Oh, yeah.
You're setting that example. So, don't only set aside time, be the leader. Be the example that does that.
So here's Ted Boehm talking about the entrepreneur's role in setting that example. For those that don't know, Ted Boehm was the director of the Pan Am Games. He was an Indiana State Supreme Court Justice sitting on our panel for our launch event. For those of you that weren't able to make it or see the live event on Facebook, like, very awesome, very well-spoken person, great interview. Enjoy this quote.
Entrepreneurs and managers generally need to understand the value of contributing to a civic exercise, not solely in terms of return to their company, but in terms of the return to the community, and encourage employees to take some time to do that sort of engagement in whatever they really like and enjoy. I mean, you won't be successful at a nonprofit exercise if you don't like it and you don't think it's important and you don't think it's fun. But most people do have some activities that they do like and do think are important and do think are fun. I think it's very helpful if an employer sets a tone that this is something that the employer values as a contribution and is a part of being of development. And generally, the experience you get is, if you do get engaged with other people outside your employment life, you find you develop relationships that turn out have some fallout. I mean, it didn't hurt my career as a lawyer one bit to spend quite a bit of time on this sporting effort. There are all sorts of other people who could tell you the same thing from their various engagements. Plus, it's fun and you get a lot of satisfaction out of it.
Having Ted's comment about entrepreneurs kind of leads us into John Merlin's comment about how our leaders here just kind of do things differently, right? So in order to be a leader in your community, you kind of have to have a different, you know, way of thinking, right? You have to...
Right. I mean, yeah, it's a special breed,
yeah.
You know, to be that type of person, for sure.
Yeah. So here's John Merlin talking about how leaders kind of have to take a different approach and do things differently to kind of really encourage that involvement.
I think you have to have, you know, the expression that you've heard 1,000 times doing this project is the public-private partnership. And it's real. You know, it's the, whether the public is in the city is clearly the mayor and the city council. The public in the state is the legislature and the governor. The private is the business community, citizens, more citizens now than it used to be, I think. It was, we thought about it, at least when our thinking was, what's the business community, the community. So public, private, and then the not-for-profit, including Lilly Endowment. You have to have all of that together because there are unique interests that each has, but they all have the same interest in making sure that the community goes forward and works for everybody. I think that's the big difference, is that we're all more attentive to and aware of the fact that the community needs to work for everybody, not just for a few, or not just for the guys who are sitting around the table, but the community needs to work for everyone. That's what's so, I'm so pleased about the way, whether it's the mayor, the United Way, or Lilly Endowment, or Old National Bank, is talking about solving problems in a holistic way. That it's not, we can't just attack the crime issue, or the hunger issue, or the education issue. They all come together. Wright Fit's a good example of that, bringing lots of elements of the community together and saying, you know, if we don't do all of these things together, it's not going to happen. So I think we've learned that. I think that's a good new way of doing it, and I think it's going to pay dividends. I think Indianapolis is going to continue to be a community where things happen and where we're successful, because we're paying attention to wanting to make sure we're successful for everybody.
Real quick, before we move on from Merlin, special shout out. I feel like we didn't do a large setup for him because we're so comfortable with him at this point.
Yeah.
Because he quite literally made all of this possible.
Yeah. So I definitely want to piggyback on that. John was a mentor of mine coming out of Butler, and we told him this idea that I kind of was scared to tell him because it kind of felt like a harebrained idea. And as soon as we told him, he was all in from the jump. He said, yes, I absolutely want you to do this. How can I help? And he got the ball rolling by introducing us to people right away and getting us in the door. And then anytime we may have had any type of, you know, struggle getting in the our foot in the door with somebody, he was the first one to shoot him an email or send a phone call. John was president of the Chamber of Commerce for a long time. He's now the vice president of community outreach for Old National Bank. We can't express enough,
oh my gosh,
how much we owe John Merland for making this podcast possible. We thank you so much, John, that there's no words for it. So thank you so much. As we move into, we have just a couple more quotes before we close out the season. So one of the things that Sandy Knapp said, we might as well address the elephant in the room, of the whole season we talked to two women.
Yeah.
And for better or worse, that partly was because of the times that it happened.
Sure.
There weren't very many people of color. There weren't very many women in the room when a lot of these things were happening. And almost every single person we interviewed addressed it. Mm-hmm. They said, hey,
it's not great.
It's not great, but it's...
it's what happened.
It's what happened.
I think my favorite... not favorite, but as we're setting this up, in the context that you're explaining this, my favorite quote, and I don't know who said it, to kind of drive home your point about how little diversity there was, someone referred to Sandy as the Allison of their time.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they're so relatable. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we talked to both of them.
Right,
we talked
exactly.
To both people that were not...
And I mean, that's not to say that there weren't a lot of very powerful women that made a lot of things happen, like Cindy Simon Scott,
right.
If I'm saying Scott right. Obviously, she was very influential as part of the Simon family in making a lot of things happen here in the city and things like that. Like, we aren't discounting the role that women played in building Indianapolis.
No, it's just definitely not.
With the way our story kind of unfolded, and with the stuff with the Hoosier Dome and bringing the Colts and the Pan Am games and stuff like that.
When,
like,
we start in the 70s.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Like, we can't rewrite history, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And that's what it was.
Sandy had a really great point that you can't forget where you come from.
Right.
Right. You got to remember where you come from. And for those of you that are listening and aren't from here, like, let's just pretend you're from here for a minute. So here's Sandy.
Well, I've said this, I think, probably from as soon as we finished the sports festival. And I said, it's absolutely essential that we not forget what it took to get us here. Because consensus building was a fairly new art form at that time in Indianapolis, to bring together both sides of the political table, to bring together a lot of different diverse segments of the community, to build partnerships instead of walls. And if you forget where you come from, you repeat the same mistakes. The very same things that had to happen in 1980 need to be happening today to keep this momentum going forward. And you're absolutely right. It's on the shoulders of the next generation.
So I think that's a really great point. And this is somebody who, you know, literally went from Pacers cheerleader to one of the most influential people in Indianapolis. I mean, it's somebody that didn't want to move to Indy.
Right.
I don't know if we really touched on that early, but when we interviewed Sandy, she went to IU and she said she literally hoped that she got a job anywhere else.
Right.
And got a job in Indianapolis and reluctantly took it and just took the bull by the horns,
mm-hmm.
and said, hey, if I'm going to be here, I'm going to make this the best place I can possibly live in.
And then I think my second favorite story, which I do believe we touched on, was that how nervous she was to be the first
employee
of
employee one of the Sports Corp.
Applied or whatever her process was and the interview and everything.
Yeah, because she had to keep it secret.
Right.
Because she didn't want the Pacers to know she was looking.
Right.
Applied, found out that they would hire her for the same rate she was making for the Pacers.
So excited.
And then was like, well, I don't know how to type. And they were like, well, hire somebody.
Yeah.
And she made it happen. Yeah. You know, and I think
it was like unanimous too. Like everyone wanted her. And she was like, I don't know.
When she even said she was so naive, she didn't realize she was going in just for them to vet her. She thought she was doing an interview when they had already decided she was getting the job.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's awesome. And Sandy, thank you so much for interviewing with us.
Special thanks because this was the only,
Our Sandy Knapp interview was the first multi-time zone, multi-device interview. We had three or two different things recording at the same time.
I was so nervous that, I set up three different devices to try to record this.
I was in Phoenix for work. Jeff was in L.A. and Sandy was in Austin at her home. And we were trying to make it all work, just hoping that it turned out all right. And then the interview went so well that we were just like, I hope that audio doesn't suck.
Right.
We didn't know what we were doing. We tested. We were recording on two different online recording devices just so in case one sucked, which it did.
Yeah.
The first one we listened to, we were like, that was terrible.
Yeah.
Luckily, the backup recording worked outstanding, and we were able to get Sandy's clips in.
Yeah, technological feat, but we made it happen.
Yeah. So, moving on, our next quote, Mark Miles. So, Mark's one of those guys. I mean,
probably needs the smallest introduction.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, my next guest needs no introduction.
Exactly.
Mark's the vice president of IndyCar. He, at 30 years old, was the executive director of the Pan Am Games. One of the most influential people in our city that we've had ever.
What did you do when you were 30? Right?
I got out of the army. I was here.
Yeah.
I worked for somebody.
Yeah. Right.
It was really interesting. I didn't know what I was getting into. You know, we were able to meet Mark through Allison. And I don't think that I knew enough about Mark's background that I knew to be nervous to talk to him.
Right.
Until
you were too naive to be nervous.
Yeah. Yep. And this was an interview Jeff was out of town and couldn't be there for. It was the first interview I did by myself. I think it was the only interview I did by myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't really know how to make the audio equipment work, so I was worried I would just screw it up and have the super important person go away.
Right. Never happened.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I'm sitting in his corner office at the IMS headquarters and overlooking the speedway, thinking about how crazy it is that this started as some random idea for a small podcast. And now I'm sitting in the vice president of IndyCar's office talking to him about how he went to Cuba and convinced Fidel Castro to let Cuba play in the Pan Am
and let us have the games.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, I mean, yeah.
So it was a really surreal moment. That was one of those moments where you kind of look around while even in the moment and go, what am I doing?
Right, yeah, yeah.
So, but he makes a really good point that, you know, that we're really trying to drive home. Even though we're asking you to go out and get involved, don't wait to be asked. Don't wait for somebody to come say, hey, will you come sit on my board? Go find the thing that you want to sit on the board for. And maybe you're not going to sit on the board right away. Maybe it takes some time to volunteer.
You definitely won't sit on the board right away.
There's a pretty good chance that you're not going to sit on the board right away. And you need to get out and volunteer.
Right. You shouldn't expect that.
So here's Mark Miles.
I would say to millennials, don't wait to be asked. The secret is not to be on boards. That may happen. The secret is to figure out what you care about and contribute to getting it done. And so if you live, you know, let's say the Near East Side or Hawville or whatever, and the established models would be Mass Avenue and Broad Ripple and Fountain Square, for example, and you really care about that, get involved with some other people and do something. Sure, it matters in a way what it is, but not really.
Before we close, I just want to take another moment to thank everybody that helped us make this happen. Through friends and family, and I have to give a giant shout, and I'm sure Jeff does too, to my wife and my family. This has been a giant time commitment that our families have been very supportive of, and a lot of very late nights after work and weekends. And
for those of you that don't know, podcasting is not a full-time job.
Yes, and you make $0 doing it. And my wife has been very supportive and has been really awesome about knowing this is my passion and this is something I really wanted to do for a long time, and has just been like, hey, go do it.
Right. You know. And hope I get an invite to the launch party.
So I have to say,
double down on that. Yeah, absolutely.
On top of John making all of this happen, if our wives didn't support us in this, none of this would have happened.
Yep.
So thank you so much, Jenny and Lindsay, for allowing us to do this. We wanted to close with what we thought was the best piece of advice.
And maybe the fewest clips heard from, quite possibly throughout the entire series, we had that moment where we're walking in the parking lot and we're like, that was great, and it's just like when everything comes together, we're completely on the same page, and we knew kind of that this was how we wanted to wrap the entire podcast. In the moment we knew that,
we just didn't know exactly what the journey would be to get to that point. But we knew this is how we wanted to close. So this is Denny Sutherland, who's been a very influential member of our community for a long time. And he talks about the three things that you should do in life. And this has nothing to do with
volunteering or sports, sitting on boards, or civic engagement, or economic development, none of that.
This is just three steps that you should follow to be a good person.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you so much for listening to Hidden Indie. Hopefully we'll be back for season two. Enjoy Denny's three pieces of advice to send you off with the end of season one. Thank you so much. This is Blaine.
This is Jeff.
We've really enjoyed it.
Well, I've got three lessons for you. First, never, ever, no matter how late you're running for a meeting, never, ever, ever pass up a lemonade stand. Always stop and buy a glass of lemonade. Always, no matter what. Because you're going to feel better about yourself, and you're going to make that kid feel so much better. Number two, no matter how much you're busy or you really don't know the person that died, but if it's a grandmother of an acquaintance of yours or a grandmother of a friend, go to the calling. Just go, go in, sign the book, go up to Jeff and say, I'm sorry grandma died. I know grandma was really important to you, but just go to the call. You're in there and out in 5 minutes. Just go. That's another thing. Go to local restaurants. And okay, you know, go to Iris. Go to Harold Snerin. Go to Working. Pardon me, Bluebeard. Go to Working Man's Friend. You know, just go to local restaurants. We're a local company. You know, you get, your paycheck comes from a local company. Support local businesses.